come up with great skill from him to wing the Mo Salah. Raheem Sterling, what a finish! What pure class from the Englishman.
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Premier Talk. This one's called Gunners Partey. I'm your host, Andrew Mello, and alongside with me, as always, is Daniel Barbudo. Today, we got a special guest, Thomas Pokornik. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here, and I'm excited to start talking about the Prem.
Daniel, give your buddy an introduction here, because you know him better than I do. So
Thomas is a fellow sports media student with Andrew, and I am in media production. He's a great friend of mine, but sadly, he's an Arsenal fan. So as bad as the defeat was this week, we still had to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I missed the game last week. Would you mind telling me how it ended, Barbs?
I can't seem to remember. You know, I think I just had a little relapse quickly. So
yeah, maybe we'll get into it sometime in the episode. We'll see.
I hope not, but I have a good feeling we will be.
Yeah, we got a jam-packed episode today. It's going to be a good one, especially with Pac being here. So our starting lineup today, we got Match Day 7 recap.
We have our Gunner Partey with guest Thomas Pokornik.
Champions League recap.
And as always, our Europa League recap.
Okay, so Daniel and Pac, let's start off here with that Match Day 7 recap. Friday, October 30th, we had the Wolves going against Crystal Palace. Nuri, the 19-year-old Frenchman, he's, you know, we talked about him in our first episode in the transfer segment, how, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to pan out well for the Wolves, and they got rid of, you know, a young talent in Vinag. But, you know, they bring in Nuri, they give him the start this week, and he gets a goal in the 18th minute, and Podence in the 27th, so they won that one 2-0. Nilsson Smith had a great game, you know, he was great down the flank, along with Nuri, and, you know, Wolves are starting to find their form. They have 3 wins in their last 4 with a tie, so Wolves are looking good.
Yeah, it's good to see this. And I also like Smed. He won man of the match in this game.
What? Smed?
Yeah.
Smed, man. Smed.
I'm not Portuguese. It's Smed.
But anyways, yeah, just a great game from Wolves. You know, just solid game, and they're starting to find their form finally. We'll go to now to Saturday, October the 31st, Halloween. We got 3 games on Sunday. Daniel, start off with the Sheffield game there.
So we had Sheffield City. City ended up taking this 1-0 from a goal from Kyle Walker. It was a lovely shot from outside the box right along the ground. Ramsdale saw it, but it was a little bit too late. He didn't really have a chance at saving it because of how well-placed the shot was. But I think that City's still struggling a little bit. Like the last couple weeks, it's been City coming out on top against lower tier teams, and it's like City winning 1-0 against Sheffield is not something you would usually see from a City team. Usually a City team goes out against Sheffield and they'll beat them 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, and I don't think that City's playing as well this year as they usually are, so it's kind of weird to see. I don't know what needs to be done.
I want to hear you chime in here. Like, what do you think the issue is with City right now? Because, you know, they've obviously spent the money, but they're not getting, you know, those results that we typically see them where they usually smash your lower tier side.
Yeah, this is a City game where normally, like you said, Barbs, they can take this one 5-6-0. They're known to blitz teams in the past, and it's certainly not a lack of attacking power. I mean, you got Aguero, you got Sterling. I know Aguero hasn't been entirely fit this season, but regardless, their options are pretty much endless on this team, whether it be Mahrez, Bernardo Silva. They lost Sané over the transfer window, obviously, to Bayern Munich, and he's a fantastic player, but that shouldn't be an excuse. And they even brought in Ferran Torres this summer. So I don't know what it is that exactly is their problem, but they're not generating the chances. They're not looking as clinical. And honestly, as an Arsenal fan, you know, we are already lost to City 1-0 this year, but they just seem to be lacking that real threat going forward. And I'm not really as scared as them this year. And I think they should be in the same category as a Chelsea or a Man United, as a team that's, you know, we don't really know if they're going to 100% secure the top 4, because they have not looked like a title contender thus far.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, they got a stacked team, as you said. They just look unconvincing so far. And you think with the roster they have and also the depth that they have, that they'd be doing much better, but it's not the case yet. And, you know, maybe they will find their form, and I think they will, because, you know, they have a world-class coach in Pep. So I think they'll be okay.
I hope for their sake that they are, because like you said, world-class coach, they're spending so much money on their players. Like, their team has expectations to go out and perform and win every single week. And I just hope for their sake that they can do that and hopefully start moving up the table and contend with the likes of Liverpool and whoever else is up high in the Prem.
Mate, London's blue, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
I'm gonna take issue to that, but maybe we'll get into that later.
I just wanted to tease you there because we're going to go into the Chelsea-Burnley fixture there. Chelsea played away to Burnley. They won that one 3-0. Ziyech in the 26th, Zoom in the 63rd, and, you know, Werner in the 70th. Overall, a great game from the Moroccan international Ziyech. He had a great goal in the first half. You know, Pope was wrong-footed there, but he just managed to slip one through, low-driven. And then he also got an assist, a lovely through ball to Timo. And, you know, the German made no mistake at that opportunity. He's very clinical in front of goal. And when he gets chances like that, he's just going to bury them every single time because he's got that status to him. And he's at that level where, you know, he's not going to miss those ones, especially against a lower tier side in Burnley. And they just want to kill teams like that. And you know, it was a great momentum for them going forward. So, you know, overall a great game. And obviously, you know, another clean sheet for the Blues. Edouard Mendy, you know, the defense is playing, you know, the defense has brought up that level once again, but, you know, the keeper, he's been making some key saves. You saw last week out, 2 weeks out against Manchester United, Chelsea played very well. So, you know, it's just overall, it's starting to come together for Frank Lampard's side. Like, what do you guys think? Do you guys think that, Chelsea's defensive struggles are over? Do you think that they're going to start building from this result and moving forward?
Yeah, I definitely think that they are. I'm going to ask Pac here quickly in a second. Just like last week when we brought up the stat where Edouard Mendy had his last five starts, he's all had clean sheets. He came out and won another one this week, making it six. Pac, just a quick question for you. I believe, and I think so does Andrew, that that Chelsea's goalkeeping struggles are over with Edouard Mendy. Do you think that, do you agree with this, or do you think that you maybe give him a little bit more time to see how he does in the Prem, or is this finally... finally finding a solution to their goalkeeping problems?
Yeah, listen, it pains me to say this, but we know how good Chelsea has been going forward for several years. They have, whether it have been Hazard a couple of years ago or now with the likes of Werner, you know, Havertz is slowly coming on, Ziyech as well looks, you know, he's picking up form. The goalkeeping and the defensive area of Chelsea was the one Achilles heel of this team. It was the only way for them to fall in small games and drop points where they shouldn't. And then they turn up against big clubs, but then Kepa would let them down. But this guy, Edouard Mendy, finally looks like a long-term solution to their goalkeeping problems. Like you said, five straight games, clean sheets. He's turned this team around. So I think he's definitely solved their issue. I'm still not very confident with them at center back. I think they have a little bit of work to do. The Thiago Silva signing, I didn't really understand. I think his best days are behind him. But you know what? Credit to him and credit to Frank Lampard and the Chelsea board for getting this done. I think they can forget about Kepa and look to Mendy in the long term.
Yeah, like you mentioned Kepa there at the end, like let go of Kepa. I don't think it's as simple as that because, you know, Kepa is still fairly young. He's in his early 20s. Goalkeepers typically hit their prime, 28, 27, around there, even later, some goalies. It's just a different prime opposed to midfielders and attacking players. And I think it's, you know, you spend that big sum of money, that big chunk of change on him, like 70 mil, 80 mil, we're talking. You just can't let him go and just sell him for half of that price because that'd be a substantial loss for the club. I think he's still, you know, he's talented. I think it's just an issue of confidence with him because he's very good in front of goal, but when he's down on himself, that's when he's in that lull, if you want to call it. It's very hard for him to you know, pick up his head. I think that there's still hope for Kepa, and I think that if you give him a loan spell at a decent club, then he could pick it up because, mm-hmm. you know, Edouard Mendy's 28, you know, he's eventually going to go. And when he does, you know, Kepa should be the replacement for him.
Mm-hmm. I like that you said the price tag too, because I feel as a player, like sometimes the price tag that gets put on you can be like, it could be rewarding, but at the same time, it can be like a negative thing. Like when you're going and you're a goalie and you're getting paid, teams are paying $80 million for you. You're like, wow, like I'm worth $80 million. It's kind of like, it could be shocking to him almost. So he's like, I know I have to go out and perform every single week. And then when you start dropping points because of errors you're making, it's like, am I worth that $80 million anymore? It's like, so I feel like that kind of plays like it keeps spinning in his head.
This reminds me of another player. He plays for Manchester United.
Maybe the captain of Manchester United.
Scary Maguire, you know, $80 million for him.
It's the exact same thing though. It's like, is because obviously I think in the English market, you're going to look to sign English players. Players are always going to be inflated. It's literally just what happens. And when you're signing somebody like Harry Maguire for $80 million, he went on and he was a great center back for the English squad. And he even played fantastic on Leicester. But I think even it's like the price tag getting to players because their lack of confidence. It's they go and they start dropping points because of errors that they're making. They're going to wonder, are they worth that $80 million anymore?
I agree 100%. It definitely adds a lot of pressure. $80 million price tag, £7 million price tag. You're expected to perform right away. And if you just wait, let's look at Chelsea on the topic. Havertz, he's picked up form recently, but his first game was shocking. And right away, he's what, 20 years old, and people are already having a go at him. And I think it's unfair, but at the same time, when the club spends a certain amount of money on a player, they do expect immediate results. And Andrew, you said it perfectly, because goalkeepers tend to take a little bit longer to reach their prime. You know, we see outfield players, you're at that 24, 25 age. Goalkeepers, they take a little longer, and they last a little longer as well. So I wouldn't completely write Kepa off, but In 1 year, he's shown me many reasons to at least worry.
So true there. We're going to go to Liverpool now. Liverpool, they played against West Ham. Last week, you know, me and Daniel were talking about this at the end of the episode. I predicted West Ham to actually beat Liverpool due to their, you know, defensive struggles right now. And they brought in Nathaniel Phillips. You know, he's been through the club, the youth ranks and whatnot. And he's also been loaned out to Stuttgart of Germany, so he's got some experience there. And he was able to get the start this week at center back. And, you know, West Ham, they drew first blood with the Pablo Fornals goal. But then Liverpool settled into the game. You know, Salah got taken down by Mazuaku. I thought it was relatively weak of a challenge. You know, he got brushed in the box. He fell down. You know, it's casual for players to do that now in today's game. He made no mistake of the penalty. And then I saw the Jota goal. I was really impressed with this. Jota was brought on alongside with Jordan Shaqiri, the Swiss international. He scored in the 85th. And it was just a lovely play because, you know, West Ham with that five back that they've grown to, you know, use game in, game out, they're very hard to break down. And David Moyes has implemented that. And, you know, teams, even the big teams sometimes struggle to penetrate their 18-yard box. And it was just like a quick decision by Shaqiri to, you know, feed a through ball in between a couple of defenders. And, you know, Jota, in the form he's been lately, he made no mistake of that. And the Portuguese international, you know, he's on a hot streak right now. So just impressive from a Liverpool side that has, you know, no Van Dijk and no Joel Matip at the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, I think Jota's been on great form recently. Just a quick little stat. Since joining Liverpool, he already has 7 goals. And Firmino had 5 goals all year for Liverpool in 2020. So it's kind of shocking to see. I don't know if Jota might take Firmino's place as maybe a central player, or they'll move Jota out wide and play someone like Mane or Salah up top. But it's all decisions that that Klopp needs to make, because when you look at a player that you just signed, he's already scoring more goals than your number 9. It's you got to take a look at your starting 11.
So Pac, what would you do if you're Klopp? You know, you get his job. You know, you have Jota at your disposal. You have Firmino. Who are you starting in this situation? Are you starting Jota up top, or are you going to give Firmino the nod?
I mean, on current form, I'm going to have to go with Jota, but I think this is a great problem to have. And I don't necessarily think that Jota's form means that Firmino no longer has a place in the squad. You know, Barbs, you brought up how he only scored 5 goals all last season. I think a player like Firmino, his role in the team goes so much more than just scoring goals. He's so important in their buildup. You know, he comes down, holds up the play, lets Salah and Mane get in behind. He's an integral part of their attack. And you look at now Jota's emergence, I think it's great for them because it allows either Salah, Mane, or Firmino to all have a rest. They're playing one game a week in the Premier League. They're playing one game a week in the Champions League because of its later start. Mm-hmm. I think this is the perfect signing for Liverpool. I don't think it's going to cost Firmino a spot. I don't think it's going to cost Mane, Salah, either of them. I think there's a place for all 4 of them to rotate and get in the squad. I think it's only going to help Liverpool going forward.
Yeah, like, You mentioned the play style of Liverpool there in their front three, and how Firmino is that sort of, you know, he's a false nine. That's really what he is. You know, their job is to, you know, obviously feed the wingers, the very talented wingers in Salah and Mane. And, you know, obviously he's going to get chances to score, and, you know, four goals is not impressive when you hear it, but you have to take into account his presence up there and who he's, you know, who he's slotted up top with. People are going to be quick to bash Firmino and, you know, say he's not good enough to be in our lineup right now. And especially with Jota being in the form that he is. But I think players like Jota, they're really important because you could bring them off the bench, and when your team's in lulls or they're not playing up to, you know, their potential and they need something, they need that switch in the game, it's almost great to have a player like Jota come off the bench because he brings that spark, he brings that energy. And, you know, that's exactly what he did in this West Ham game. He came on and he had an immediate impact. And sometimes that's what you need off the bench. And I think, you know, Klopp is going to keep utilizing him off the bench.
Yeah, I hope he does, because obviously he's run a form. Just one thing I want to move on to here. Liverpool's rumored to sign Alaba. Alaba, the 28-year-old center back from Bayern Munich. I think that it would be a good signing for Liverpool because with Van Dijk being injured right now, and they can sign him in the January transfer window, Van Dijk is most likely looking to be gone for like 6 to 8 months. So if he's going to be gone for that long, like they're going to need a center back to come in and fill his spot. Pac, I'll ask both of you, actually. Who do you guys think, what Premier League team could use Alaba alongside Liverpool? Because I think Alaba's a world-class center back. Do you think that anybody else needs him right now?
You're calling Alaba a world-class center back. I'll go as far to say, just to call him a world-class player, the versatility that he brings to his side, he can play in the midfield, he can play on the left, he can take set pieces. He's an incredible player, someone that I've really rated for a long time. And I think Bayern, I know the contract situation there is a little shady, but if they were to lose him, that would be a serious dent in their team, first of all. You look at the Premier League, I think any team would love to have him. Obviously, Liverpool's probably the best fit just because Van Dijk went down. But you got to look at a team like Man City that's really struggled in the back. I knew they brought in someone that Andrew's a big fan of.
Ruben Dias, yeah.
In the Portuguese international for a big chunk of money. So I don't know if they're going to be really willing to spend there. But also Chelsea, I mentioned earlier that I don't think they have the best center-back pairing in the league. And I think any other team other than that, he's almost above their level. I don't think he'd be interested in wanting to come to an Arsenal or a Manchester United. I think the stage that those clubs are at just does not suit his ambition. So yeah, I'm going to look at the top three there in City, Liverpool, and Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you, Pac, because, you know, I don't think it's not ideal for him to go to a Manchester United right now or an Arsenal. You know, they're still trying to find their way with their new coaches, with the new coach in Arteta, and, you know, Ole's trying to manage some younger players there as well. So I don't think those clubs are ideal for him. I think the ideal club for him would be Liverpool, no doubt about it, because there's versatility with him, like you said as well, Pac. And say when, you know, one day when Van Dijk's back and, you know, Joe Gomez is having a good run of form, you could play them at the center back position. And then, you know, Alaba could slot where? He could slot down the middle of the park alongside, you know, a Gini Wijnaldum or a Henderson. You know what I mean? So I think that would be the best fit for him, and I think he would get you'd get along really well with Jurgen Klopp. So yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Liverpool because they would immediately need him right now. But yeah, the other teams are just not at his level. And you know, I was reading a report that in terms of Alaba and his contract, like they offered him a contract, I believe it was $250k a week, and he's asking for, I think, above 300. So the president of Bayern came out and he said, yeah, we're just not going to bother anymore with the contract talk. So it looks like he's really going to leave. And then I read a report today saying that he might end up in Spain, either at a Barcelona or Real Madrid. So I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be an interesting, you know, time period when he's a free agent, because the world's top clubs everyone's going to want him because he's an elite player.
Yeah, so I like how you said the price tag that Alaba wants, because he's asking for £300,000 a week, which is a lot. And if you look at some of the players that are getting that money, like you're looking at world class players. But obviously, like, okay, well then you take into consideration the Premier League clubs that have way too much money and they just like dishing out money. Like,
but if you know, Cavani, he's 33 and he's getting paid £250 a week. Why can't Manchester United splash 300?
No, no, no. Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. He has the right to be asking that type of money because he's a fantastic player. He's very versatile, like Pac said, he can play anywhere, and he just won the Champions League too. So like, how can you, as a center back going on 29, you kind of deserve that amount of money. You're just maybe at like the edge of his prime years, but he's still a fantastic player, and I think that he does deserve the money he's asking. It's just what team is willing to give to him.
Yeah, we're going to go into Sunday, November 1st, the last round of games here alongside Monday. But on Sunday, November the 1st, we had Brighton, Hove Albion against Tottenham Hotspurs. This was an interesting match because it went down to the wire. Kane was fouled just inside the 18-yard box, and you know he went up for a header, got hit from behind, went down. It was an obvious penalty, but it was just on the border of the box there. But, you know, nonetheless, the referee gave him the penalty spot kick, and he made no mistake of that. They made it 1-0. And then later in the match, Tariq Lamptey, you know, he's been sought out by many big clubs throughout Europe, the former Chelsea product there, the right wing back. You know, it was just a lovely build-up play from Brighton Hove Albion, and then they moved the ball over to the right side of the box where Tariq Lamptey was, you know, he was unmarked. There was terrible defending from Tottenham. And he just made no mistake of that. And crossbody goal, just lovely finish. And, you know, Tariq Lamptey, if he keeps this up, I don't see him personally playing much longer at Brighton Hove Albion because he's going to be above their level soon. And he's just overall a great option on the right-hand side. And then, you know, late in that match, Bale's back, 73rd minute. You know, he crushed Brighton Hove Albion's hopes there. Just a cross came in and Bale headed it in. And, you know, it's great to see. Great to see Bale, you know, to get back on the score sheet, especially with his former club in Tottenham Hotspur, because it was really sad to see him, you know, in the situation in Madrid and constantly sitting on that bench and not getting minutes because, you know, he's world class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you, I'm happy for Bale to see him back on the score sheet because I think he deserves it. And I think he really likes his playing back at his former club, which is Tottenham. And for me, this is just a good Tottenham win. I think that they were favored in this match to beat Brighton, and I'm glad that they came out and did what was expected.
We're going to Newcastle and Everton now. Newcastle, they've been getting the results of late. Callum Wilson, he had a brace here in the 56th and the 84th. They won that one 2-1. It's Everton's second straight loss. Pock, what do you think about Everton? Do you think this is just like a low point for them? Do you think they're going to bounce back and continue on the way they have started in the season? Or do you think they're going to continue just to struggle to win games?
Listen, I think that they're somewhere in between the team that started and the team that's playing now. I don't think they're as good at the 3 or 4 and start where we thought, okay, you know what, maybe they'll even push for the top four.
We'll do that again because you liked a bit. I don't know.
I liked?
Yeah, because yeah, okay. You clicked, yeah. We'll do that again. Go ahead.
Okay. I think with Everton, I don't think they're as good as their start indicated, but I don't think they're as poor as their current form. You look at the signings that this club made over the summer to completely transform their midfield. I thought James Rodriguez was amazing. I think that's a player that still has a lot in the tank. Guys like Alan Doucouré over from Watford. I think they're going to compete in the Premier League. I don't think that they're going to be a team that of recent years where they disappoint, but I think overall they're not going to be good enough to push for top four like we may have thought early on in the year. I think they'll end up around, you know, the 8 or 9 or even 7 spot this year, but still a solid side, and they'll give a lot of teams headaches, especially when teams like Manchester United, I know they play this weekend, or Chelsea come to town.
Daniel, do you think 8th place is a fair finish for them? Do you agree with Pac, or do you think they're going to finish lower or higher?
I'm hoping that they finish a little bit higher because, like Pac said, I think that the signings they made puts them into contention of a top 6 team. I know you look at Dominic Calvert-Lewin and you look at Richarlison and James all playing up top, and they were scoring goals, and now they're starting to slow down. I don't know if that's just they're playing every single game. They're playing week in, week out, which as a professional player, you should be expected to do, but sometimes it can get to players. I don't know. This isn't a good look for Everton, especially losing to Newcastle, but I'm hoping that they can step it up and march back up the table.
We had an absolute goal fest. Southampton against Villa. Villa, you know, they've been winning their games as well. They're at first at one point in the Premier League this season, undefeated through 4 games. But now, you know, they lost this one against Southampton. Southampton, you know, 2 good results. They won last week against the Toffees, and then this week they go to play Villa and they beat them 4-3 in an absolute goal fest. James Ward-Prowse, the captain of Southampton, He had a brace there, both free kicks. They were absolute screamers. Just overall amazing free kicks. Some of the best I've seen in a long time. He's just a set piece specialist, and he's been leading that team very well. I remember years back when he was starting to merge in the squad and find his place in the 11. I was looking at him like, this guy's going to be a great player, and sure enough, he's been a good player. He's been good for the level of Southampton. I think he'll be there for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that he's a fantastic player. And to score two free kicks, and both of them were on his birthday as well. And he got an assist on the Danny Ings fourth goal. And that Danny Ings fourth goal was an absolute, like, all these goals were absolutely fantastic. Ings cut in from the right side onto his right foot. And sorry, he cut in from the left side onto his right foot. And he smashed the top corner bar down. It was an absolute screamer. And Southampton actually led this game 4-0. And then Villa marched back and they scored a goal in the 60th and then a goal in the 90th plus three and then a goal in the 90th plus seven. So I don't know. Does it kind of show Villa's resilience here, marching back in a game that they're losing 4-0?
I don't know. I think Villa, you talk about resilience. They were a team that just escaped relegation last year. I think they ended up being safe by 1 or 2 points, and they made some great signings over the summer. They brought in Emi Martinez from Arsenal. They got Jack Grealish to stick around. So I think when it comes to Villa, they're going to be a team that is I don't think, again, similar to Everton, they're not going to be as good as their 3-4-0 start. But I think they have a lot to offer in the Premier League and can definitely push for at least target the top half of the table.
Yeah, I think so as well. Just the way they started, they got some talent there. But you also see over the last couple of games, they show their struggles defensively. There's some liabilities back there. Target's been beat a couple of times, and so has, their leader at the back, Tyrone Mings. So these guys still have to mature. They're young players, and that has to be taken into account. And I think it was, a little bit of false hype at the start with them winning those games. I wasn't expecting them to, continue on that, but I also don't see them to finish below table, because I think that, they're hungry. They're a hungry team this year for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to move on here to the Fulham West Brom game. Fulham came out on top of this one 2-0. It was a very big game, especially for both these teams, because they're both sitting in relegation right now and they're hoping to grab the 3 points and kind of squeak out of relegation. The first goal was scored by Bobby Reed, which was a header back from
Bobby,
which is a header back into the box and then headed into the net. And then the second goal was like another screamer from Ola Aina, who's a right back for Fulham. So to see a right back coming up the field and scoring an absolute banger like he did, it was a fantastic strike.
Yeah, it was just like you said before, it was just a huge game for Fulham to win, because they were struggling to score any sort of, they're struggling to create any sort of chance, and then for them to go and beat a team that's going to be fighting for that relegation to fight to stay afloat rather. It was huge for Fulham and the London-based side to get that win in a scrappy game.
Okay, so the last game on Monday was Leeds-Leicester. Leicester ended up coming out on top 4-1 with a goal from Vardy and then two goals from Tielemans, which Tielemans being a center mid, you're expecting Vardy to score more, but Tielemans coming out and scoring some goals, it's good to see from a Leicester squad, because I feel like Leicester's sort of in the same situation as Tottenham, where it's like majority of their goals are for Tottenham's. It's Heung-min's Son and Kane and Leicester. It's mostly Vardy scoring goals. So getting some contribution from the midfield is definitely good. And I just wanted to point out here quickly that last week when we were doing some predictions, it was my dark horse over Andrew's dark horse. And looks like my dark horse came out on top.
Yeah. Doesn't look good for me right now, but I still got my faith in Leeds. Marcelo Bielsa is an amazing coach. And they have some talented players, and Patrick Bamford, he's been playing tremendously to start the season, and Rodrigo just behind him as well. I think that Leeds will continue to be a difficult opponent. I don't predict them to go like a crazy like top eight, but I see them finishing above the middle of the table. Tielemans, you had a great game there, and the guy, he used to have like 90 potential on FIFA, like this guy's crazy. So he's got to start scoring some bangers.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you out on that, Barbs. You mentioned that Leicester was your dark horse. Are they even allowed to qualify for a dark horse team? This Leicester team was a side that sat in a Champions League position for maybe 30 game weeks last year before blowing it on the final day.
Final day against Manchester United. I think
Leicester's on the same level as your precious United. I think they're right up there to be a top six club, a big club, because this team year in and year out, they continue to you know, get results, and
solid team. Daniel's not as bold as me. You know, I like
that's such a safe pick with Leicester. Come on.
We're going to go into the big match that happened over on Sunday. We didn't forget about it, guys. We want to save it for last. It was Arsenal against Manchester United. Pox Arsenal against Daniel Barbudo's Manchester United. Man United, you know. Sorry, Daniel, man. They've just been it's been poor of late, man. 1-0 for Arsenal. Abba, you know, we had a pen in the 69th minute, eh? And, you know, Pogba. I love Pogba. I even got a, you know, I'm a Chelsea guy, but I got a Pogba jersey. I love Pogba. You know, he's got that flair, that skill, that style. But, man, you know, I look at Pogba sometimes and I'm like, this guy's super lazy, man. And he just, you know, he tracked back and just, you know, I guess he was tired too, but just a sloppy, sloppy tackle on Hector Bellerin. And, you know, Arsenal's going to pass up that chance.
Yeah. Yeah, that leading to the penalty, and you know, Aubameyang, he's a world class striker. He's not gonna miss a penalty. For Arsenal's sake, I'm glad he did. For United's sake, I wish he had missed it.
I saw the highlights of the game. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it, but from the highlights I was looking at, I'm like, man, Arsenal had some great chances in the first half. Arsenal looked like they could have won this one by, you know, 2-3 goal margin, because, you know, Willian, he had a great chance on his left foot, smashed it off the bar. So, and Aubameyang missed some chances, got a ball second post, and he wasn't able to slide and, you know, connect with the pass. But overall, just, I thought Arsenal deserved to win this game. Pac, what do you think from an Arsenal fan perspective?
I think Mohamed Elneny and Thomas Partey need to go home, empty their pockets, and return Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes back to Old Trafford, because we absolutely bullied you in the midfield. And I thought it was a bit of a slow game early on. Both sides looked like they weren't really ready to go for it. But I just think United never quite got going. You didn't really show any threat on the offensive side. I think Arsenal was the better team. And to get a result away from home against a rival like United, it was just huge. And I think if we lost that game, that really would have made a big dent in our hopes for top four this year, just because it would have been, I think, 3 losses in a row. So It was a huge result, and I think very deserved, because United were very, very poor.
You know, I like how you said that it was slow, because I know there was former Manchester United, now legends of the game, like Paul Scholes. He was talking about it, how before Manchester, like back in the day when Manchester United played Arsenal, they would have fights in the tunnels, because the passion that these players had going out against a rival, and they wanted to go and play the best game that they could, because, like I said, it's going out against a rival. And you just didn't see that in this game at all. It's like two teams. It was like a walk in the park for both of them, because it was very slow. And then teams started to heat up in the second half. Like, the penalty happened. Arsenal looked like they had all the momentum moving forward. And then Manchester United realized that in the 70th minute after this penalty, that they need to start playing. And that's when they finally did. But when you're starting to play the game in the 70th minute, by that time it's too late.
I was just, you know, this is, you know, really to Arsenal. You know, a couple of weeks back, you know, Mesut Ozil was left out of the squad. You know, sad to see, man. I really like Mesut, man. He was just a class player, an assist machine, and to see him not even on the bench, you know, just super frustrating to see as a fan of football, because he just got so much class. And, you know, Puck, I want to ask you, do you think, you know, obviously right now in the starting lineup, there's no spot for him. But do you think it's justified to keep him out of the 23-man roster? Do you think he should be on the bench?
If you watch Arsenal this year, you'll realize our one problem. And if you go back years, our problem was always defense. And this year, right now we have the best defensive record in the Premier League. We just went to Old Trafford, kept a clean sheet. This season, our problem is creativity. And you know what? You can say what you want about Mesut Ozil. Like you said about Pogba, he can be a bit lazy. Sometimes he doesn't want to track back. But the one thing he provides is that creative work, and no one on this team has what he has in that quality to pick a pass or his vision. So, you know what? Maybe he's not good enough to be in the starting lineup, but you cannot convince me that there's 23 better players than Mesut Ozil in this club. I 100% think he should at least be on the bench. Bring him on, you know, that 65-minute. He's a little fresher than everyone else. You know, his work rate can be a little bit better, and he can really change a game. So I think Arteta's lying to us personally. I think this is much bigger than football. So I don't know. It like you said, it's sad to see. I'm a big Mesut Ozil fan as well.
And the guy, you know, he came clutch and he gave Gunnarsson some money, man. And like, they're going to let Gunnarsson go, the mascot of Arsenal. And I read it and I was super impressed by, you know, I didn't really know how Mesut Ozil was as a person, but it just goes to show you that he's a class football player and he's also a class individual. Just to do that and, you know, offer some of his wage to you know, the mascot of Arsenal due to, you know, COVID, you know, that they said they had to cut him. I don't see how they can't, you know, compensate their mascot, but, you know, just overall class from Mesut to do that. I just want to highlight a quote from Arteta the other day. This is off of FootMob. This is in regards to the Saliba situation and how, you know, Saliba has not been featured in the squad. He says, "I'm fed up with the situation because, as you could see, we tried to find a way in the last few days of the transfer window to give him some football." He said that on Wednesday. "I explained that he needed that transition year when we decided to buy him and send him on loan to Saint-Étienne. For many reasons, that didn't happen, and he didn't have that transition year." Do you guys think that Saliba has a place in the squad, or do you think it's right for, you know, Arteta to be frustrated and want to see him, you know, be on loan?
Pac, I'm gonna let you start, and then I'll try.
Yeah, as an Arsenal fan here, it's frustrating because we're still as good as we've been defensively this year. We're still sending out guys like Mustafi out onto the field and starting, and we have an 18-year-old talent that's hailed to be one of the best in Europe, and I'm so excited to see him feature in the team. But like he's only 18, and I think as a center back, it takes more and more time rather than just to be a striker and burst onto the scene at 18. You got, you know, that extra speed. I think defensively, it's a lot harder to get into a team early, especially, and to perform of the level of a team with Champions League hopes. So, you know what? I think he's going to be a great player. I think give him time. He's had some personal issues. It's tough moving from France to a new country. He doesn't speak the language. Give him some time. Send him out on loan. You know, we may need him in the team because, like I said, Mustafi is just not cutting it for us. But, you know, I see him get some game time elsewhere, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you, Puck, I agree that he needs to get some game time elsewhere. I would like for Arsenal, because I think he's like we've mentioned already on the podcast, we enjoy seeing young talent, but if he's just going to sit there on the bench for Arsenal, there's not going to get any minutes in the first team, and he's not going to improve at all. So for me, if I'm Arsenal, I'm sending him out on loan to a team that needs a center back. Maybe even if that's like a team in the Prem, like a lower tier team in the Prem that could need some defensive players that can help out a little bit back there. But the one thing I'm not going to do, because I know we've discussed this as well, is give them the option to buy, because we spoke about it on the first episode of the podcast. Felipe Anderson, he left West Ham, and West Ham left Porto the opportunity.
Bro, let him rot in Porto.
Okay, Andrew's obviously gonna say that because because being a Benfica fan, doesn't really care about Porto. But I think that Felipe Anderson is a player that West Ham needs, and they sent him on a loan, and then they gave him the option to buy. And for me, it's the same thing with Arsenal. Saliba is gonna be needed eventually. Maybe he's not needed right now in Arsenal, but if they send him on a loan, just please don't give him the option to buy.
Yeah, like, you know, I think it's justified for him to go out on loan right now, because you look at Arsenal's back line, they play a three back. Arteta likes using the three back. A lot of teams have been implementing it of late. But they, you know, they brought in Gabriel Magalhães from Lille, the Brazilian international, and, you know, he's inserted himself into the starting lineup week in, week out, because, you know, he's had an effect on the score sheet, but he's also had a great presence at the back there for Arsenal. And then you got guys that are versatile, like Kieran Tierney, that have been slotted back there because, you know, Saka plays on the left now. And you also got guys like Rob Holding, David Luiz. So, you know, right now, I think those options are better, and Arteta favors them more than he would an unexperienced, center half. And I think, Saliba, I haven't really been able to watch him play, but from what I've heard, he's a great talent, and he's got some promise to him. So, if that's the case, he needs minutes at this age to, get that experience and to continue to grow. So I would definitely let him go out on loan when January transfer window rolls around. Okay, we're going to go to, a little segment. Since we have Pac on the show, he's a devoted Arsenal fan. We want to do, a little segment, start one, bench one, sell one. So I thought of three players. I wanted to make it a little difficult for you, and this is something that they deal with, on a regular basis. Who does Arteta put up front with Abba? Abba's, it's clear he's going to start in week in, week out. He's world class. He's in a sensation up top. But start one, bench one, sell one. You go Lacazette, Willian, and Pep. What are you doing there?
Ooh, this is tough. I'll say that. I guess I'll start with speaking on Willian. I know you're a fan of Chelsea. I don't know what your thoughts on him. Personally, when they made the signing, I was not the biggest fan of the move. Especially talking to Chelsea fans, I was told that he's a guy that, he's got some class in him, but he tends to turn up two or three times a year with these magic performances, and then he can often go missing. And of course, on his debut, he records three assists, and he looks like this creative spark in our team that we need. But clearly, since then, he's just been very stagnant. He doesn't do a lot away from the ball. So I think I'd cut Willian. Like I said, I didn't think that they even needed to sign him. And personally, Nico Pepe, I'm a big fan of the player. He can be frustrating at times, but he shows these glimpses that he can be a star in the Premier League. So I think I would go and start him. And that leaves Lacazette to the bench for me. I hate to say this because he seems like a great guy for the team, but I don't think the Lacazette signing ever really worked out the way many Arsenal fans thought it would. When we signed him, we thought finally he's the answer to what seemed like years and years of suffering at the striker position, ever since Van Persie left, really. But he hasn't really ever been that 15, 20 goal scorer in the Premier League. And I think he's only 28 years old, but he seems older than that in the way he moves on the field. He seems oftentimes slow, or by the 60th, 70th minute, he's tired. But you know what? Similar to a Firmino, he's great at holding up the ball, and he does link up fairly well with Aubameyang. So I think he's good enough to get in over Willian and at least be on the bench.
Daniel, what do you think with Pac's, statement there?
I know Barb's right away. He's not a fan of Pepe. He's always wanting to rip me on 72 million for this.
Yeah, I'm like Pac said. For me, the person I'm gonna do, I'd put Pepe. I'd sell Pepe, to be honest with you. Like Pac said, I hated that price tag. I think it's kind of like the confidence thing that we talked about earlier, though, because he was a good player in the Ligue 1, and for him to come for such a massive price tag. And then you start playing not up to your greatest abilities, and then your confidence starts lacking, and then everything just starts to go downhill from there. But for me, Pepe was way too much, and I don't think that he has the talent that Willian or Laka has. I know Pac said he would sell Willian, but I think that Willian's a proven player in the Prem, and if you look at that, that's something that teams always look for, because Willian knows what it takes to win, because he's won the Premier League before with Chelsea, and for me, that's why he gets my bench nod. And then to start, I'm starting Laka. I know he's not the best striker, like Pac said. He's not somebody that comes out and scores 15 to 20 goals a year, but he scores some important goals, and he links up well with Aubameyang. So for me, I'm going to start him.
For me, when I look at these three players, I'm like, immediately, when I see Pepe, I want to start him because, he's young. And if you're Arsenal, you spent that big sum of money on him, 72 mil we're talking. It's a lot of money. And, when he arrived, he was coming off a great season with Lille, and he scored many goals, and he linked up nice there with Okone. So, people thought he was going to be the real deal. And I still think he will be, because I believe, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's 23.
I think he's 24.
He's around there. He hasn't even hit his prime. 26, 27 is when he might hit his prime there. So I would definitely, especially with the money you spent on him, I would start him. And then you know, I would get rid of Laka. I would have to sell Lacazette. And I'll tell you guys why, because, you know, ever since Aubameyang, you know, came into the squad, there was no doubt that he was going to be that number, you know, the number one guy up top. And you know this, Pac, from watching them week in, week out, he is their number one guy. And I think it's been so conflicting having, you know, Lacazette and Aubameyang both in the starting lineup, because they're traditional strikers. That's what they are. One's not a winger, the other's not a winger. So, you know, previous managers, you know, we've seen with Unai Emery, he tried to put Lacazette up top, and then he put Aubameyang out on the wing. And I didn't like that. I was looking at it, and, you know, he didn't seem comfortable. He didn't seem like he was at his most dangerous there. So I would definitely get rid of Lacazette. It's just a conflict there. And then I would bench Willian, because, you know, you mentioned me as a Chelsea fan. I loved Willian, and I was really shocked to see him go, and I thought he was going to stay. You know, shocked to see him go to a rival as well. But, you know, there's so many moments where I'm looking at Willian play in the Chelsea kit. I'm like, wow, this guy is unbelievable. And he was at times, and he just had an amazing right foot on him, and he was able to, you know, dazzle the fans there and show, you know, bursts of energy. And I loved him at Chelsea, and I guess maybe it was his time to go, and, you know, he'll be great for an Arsenal side that needs some of that experience. And like you said, he's very spontaneous in his, you know, the way he, you know, puts impact into a game. He'll be impactful at one moment, and then he'll be non-existent in the next. And that's what you're going to get with Willian. You're going to have to deal with that and live with that. So, you know, with that in mind, I would definitely like him off the bench, and, you know, he'll give you that energy and that boost off the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one quick question here for Pac. We got two questions left for you, but one I want to ask quickly. How well do you think Arsenal is going to finish this year?
Ooh, this is tough. This is a tough question. I think we have the ability to get into the top four. And I don't think, you know, Manchester United, I think people thought that they'd be doing a little bit better than they are, and that they're going to do, just because of how hot they were to end last season. But I think Manchester United still has a lot of holes. I think with our defensive record, how it's gone so far, we've signed Thomas Partey. We have a solid midfield. Alba's doing his thing up front. If we can get Pepe going, I think we can seriously push for that four spot.
It's Partey time.
It is Partey time right now. One team I think a lot of people aren't giving enough credit to in their top four race, and it pains me to say this, but that's the Spurs, because I can't think of a team that has a more dangerous attack in the league right now, mm-hmm. with Kane and Son, and Bale's only going to get better as he gets more minutes. So I think four is the goal. How confident am I that we get there? I'm going to say it's 50%. I think us, Spurs, and I guess Manchester United are going to be battling for that four spot. Whereas
you don't think Chelsea will be there, or no?
I think Chelsea's going to be third. I think.
Okay.
Now that Mendy's solid in the back and Werner's finally gotten going, and they just have so many options attacking-wise, and I think Chelsea will be a step ahead of us.
Okay, I have a question here for you. You know, you're Arsenal manager for a day. You know, Arteta sacked, you're in. Who would you sign when it comes to January transfer window? Who would you want to bring in? Who's one player that you would see fitting with the current roster, and, you know, having an immediate impact?
I mentioned before that creativity is the hole in our team, and I really, really wanted Oussem Aouar from Lyon in the transfer window, and I really thought we were going to get that deal done. So I think he'd be the number one target, but another guy that I'm going to nominate here, and I'm definitely butchering his last name, but he plays for Red Bull Salzburg, and I think he's maybe 20 years old. He's Hungarian, and that's Dominic Szoboszlai, I think is
Szoboszlai. I think it's a hard name. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
But he is unbelievable. I've watched this guy in the Champions League. The way he drives plays, he's got a fantastic shot. He can pick a pass. He looks like a prime Mesuroso in the way he picks the pass. Just he's right-footed. So I think a guy like that, young, he can come into our team. He maybe doesn't have to start from day one, but he can be that spark, and he can really, really, as he gets better, build this team into a side that gets back to the Champions League every year. So it's between them two, probably Aouar, just because he's a little bit more proven. And I think we can finally switch to that 4-3-3 that eventually Arteta wants to implement. but it's got to be one of those two guys, a creative midfielder.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool how you mentioned Dominic Szoboszlai. I might be butchering his name as well, but I've seen him play, and he's got loads of potential. Very good on the ball, like you said, and he can play out on the wing as a left midfielder or a right midfielder, and he also plays, down the middle of the park as an attacking midfielder, as a central attacking midfielder. He's a big guy. He's got a big frame. I think he's around 6 feet tall. I've seen him play, and he's got loads of potential. And between him and Aouar, I'd probably have to agree with you and say Aouar, because he did loads of damage last year in the Champions League, and you see his talent on the ball. And I Juventus also wanted his signature as well. So if Arsenal really wants him, they're gonna have to spend a little bit more than they'd like, because they're dealing with some competition there.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think Aouar is going to be somewhere around the 60-70 million range, which I don't really know if we can afford at this time, especially we're still paying for Pepe, because that was in installments, and the Partey deal was 45-50 million pounds. Whereas a guy like Szoboszlai is, I think he has a 25 million pound release clause. So I'd be triggering that January 1st just because of his age, and he's a cheaper option. But honestly, I'd be thrilled with both signings.
They're an absolute talent factory too. Like if you look at some of the players that have come out that Salzburg system, Mane is just one that comes to mind. And Hwang Hee-chan, he just was signed for, Leipzig. Leipzig's was just been, raiding their entire team. So just overall an amazing system that they got there. Similar to that of my Benfica, but not as good. Benfica's got the best in the world, I'll tell you that.
So yeah, after looking, that was all the games, all that happened on match day 7. We're just going to go look quickly at the table right now. We're going to do a quick little table recap just to see how the table shuffled down after match day 7. To start off at the top of the table, Liverpool falls out on top with 16 points after winning again this week. Leicester second, Tottenham third, Everton fourth, and Southampton squeaks into Europa League right now in fifth over, surprisingly, Wolves, Chelsea, and then Aston Villa dropping down 6 spots from last week after a loss. Arsenal
got a game in hand too.
Yeah, they still do have a game
Everton's
in hand.
Got
so,
a game in hand, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah, Aston Villa has a game in hand. So hopefully they can make up some points there. And then you have below them, just mid-table, you got Arsenal, Manchester City sitting at 10th. Manchester City also has a game in hand as well, so they can make up some points and climb with a win all the way up to 4th. You got Newcastle in 11th with Leeds right behind them. Then you have Crystal Palace, West Ham, and United. United sitting in 15th right now, again, with the game in hand. So with the win, they can climb up a couple spots. You got Brighton sitting in 16th after their loss to Spurs this week. And Fulham just climbed out of relegation after beating West Brom this week. So obviously that was a fantastic outcome for them, because now they are sitting in 17th out of relegation. And then in relegation, 18th is West Brom, 19th is Sheffield, and 20th is Burnley.
Burnley's absolute terrible. They're terrible this year.
All three of the relegation teams are still yet to win a game. So hopefully this week they can come out, grab the 3 points, and get out of relegation quickly. Pac, I want to ask you before I ask Andrew, is there any surprises here? I know it's only week 7 and there's still lots of soccer to be played, but do you see anything here that really jumps out at you and surprises you?
I'm going to go with Andrew's dark horse, Leeds United, man. They are fun to watch. Been over a decade since they were even in the Premier League. I think they're back. They're here to stay. Bielsa's at the wheel over there in Leeds. And you got guys like Bamford who are really coming along. And I think Rodrigo was a pretty good signing. They got Phillips there, the English international. So Leeds are a good team. There's certainly no step over. And I'm surprised with how successful they've been so far.
Yeah, like, don't sleep on my Leeds. That's all I got to say. Don't sleep on my Leeds, because they're gonna be up there. Don't worry. And then, Portugal international team, a.k.a. Wolves, I love that. I love watching them too, because they're just an exciting squad. And, my boy Raul, my boy's there, former Benfica man. So, 6th place right now. And I think they could finish definitely, in a Europa League spot. They just missed out last year. Super tough for them to, miss out. But I think they'll be back in Europe next year.
So on that note, we're going to move on to the Champions League recap. We're just going to run through all the games quickly and just discuss some of the goal scorers. First game was Liverpool-Atalanta. I think many Liverpool fans or even Atalanta fans expected this to be a close game because Liverpool, obviously, with their centre-back struggles and injuries right now, and then Atalanta, looking back at last year, they were in fantastic form and they made a huge run in the Champions League. But Liverpool came out on top of this one 5-0, and three of those goals came from Jota. So like we had already stated, Jota's on a fantastic run of form, making that 7 goals total this year. And he's looking to be a great signing for Liverpool. The next game we're going to look at is Manchester City versus Olympiacos. Manchester City took this one 3-0, which I think was expected. And again, another young signing that's in form right now is
you wish that was United that won 3-0. You wish.
Yeah, sadly it wasn't United that grabbed the 3 points. It was City here. And another goal from a youngster, Ferran Torres. And then the next game pains my heart from last night. It was Manchester United versus Istanbul. I'm going to butcher this. Başakşehir.
Say it 5 times fast right now, Daniel. Hit him with the 5 times fast.
I can't say that. It's awful.
Başakşehir. That's pretty good,
Yeah.
You want to give it a go? Pac, you want to give it a go?
I just want to mention that I think Demba Ba is maybe 50 years old, and he looked like prime Ronaldo against United. So instead of saying Başakşehir 5 times fast, that'll be my little 2 cents for this game.
Oh, God. Yeah, so Demba Ba with the first goal there, and he dummied the second goal too, which was a very nice dummy there. But just another sad result to see from Manchester United. They've been in good form in the Champions League, beating PSG 2-1 and then beating Leipzig 5-0, which was a fantastic result last week. And then you come out against Istanbul. It's their first time in the Champions League. They've never won a game. They've yet to score a goal in Champions League, and then they come and they stun you 2-1. It was very sad to see as from an United fan standpoint.
Yeah, I saw Martin Skrtel, I can't say his name, but former Liverpool man. He's like, it was the first time the Istanbul had won in the Champions League. It's like, well, I wish you were playing United every week if this was the case. So this is just all the banter, you know. It's hilarious to see.
Yeah, I'm hoping United can get their form back together and start winning some games again. The last game from Champions League that featured Premier League sides was Chelsea against Stade Rennais. Butchered that name too.
Chelsea
won this game 3-0. 2 goals from Werner. There was a red card in this game. It was a back-to-back yellow. Went to VAR. It was a handball that, like, for me was just... It was an unintentional handball in the box, which Werner converted
mate,
a penalty.
Mate, don't be salty. It's okay. United lost this week. You know, chin up. It's okay. Chelsea's just gonna keep the results rolling, and you know,
it was a second yellow VAR. I didn't like it at all.
I can't relate, bro. I can't relate to you, but yeah.
When your team is coming out and beating Stade Rennais, it's a good result. So yeah, that was all the games from Champions League, and then moving on to Europa League here. There was one big upset. Antwerp beat Spurs 1-0, and that's just a, like, you don't expect, I know we talked about this last week, you don't expect these Premier League sides to be losing to teams in Europa League.
Yeah, like I was watching that game, the Belgian side Antwerp, there's nothing on at the time, and I really want to watch Spurs play. And you know, I saw they're going up against Antwerp. I'm like, oh, this could be an easy result. We mentioned in our previous episode as well. And I just saw how Spurs, man, they couldn't convert any chances. They had some chances, some great chances, and they just couldn't capitalize. And Antwerp, going forward, they look dangerous every time. You know, Mbokani, he had a great chance backdoor, sweaty goal, and he could have finished, and he skied the ball. And they had another guy, their left back, I forget his name now, but. He came down the pitch, off a great, great through ball, and he couldn't capitalize as well. He skied it. So it could have easily been 3-0 to Antwerp, and just a poor, poor result for Mourinho's men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then moving on to the second game that happened in the Europa League was Arsenal against Dundalk. Pac, this was a good result for your side, beating probably a lower-tier team, Dundalk, 3-0. But you still take the 3 points where you can get them, because, like, if you look at the Antwerp game, you don't always get the 3 points when you're expected to.
Yeah, those first 30 minutes of those games, I wanted to rip my eyes out. It was a tough watch, I'll tell you that. We looked like, oh, we're seriously going to drop points to a team of this caliber. No disrespect to Dundalk. But we got it going just before halftime. We got two goals. And then second half comes back, and Nico Pepe just shows what we paid that $72 million or £72 million pounds for. Right foot outside of the box, right in the top corner.
That's why I started him.
You can't ask for a better goal than that. You wish, you know, Greenwood, Martial, Rashford were of that level. You know, 3 points nonetheless, and we're back at it today actually with another Europa League match.
Yeah, and then we got Athens versus Leicester. Leicester came out on top of this one 2-1, which again is another expected result for Leicester, especially against a lower tier Athens side.
Just before you go, sorry to interrupt you, Daniel. I wanted to ask Pac, you know, what are your ambitions as an Arsenal fan? Like, do you think they're going to win this whole thing, or do you think that they're just going to, you know, care more about the league?
I'd like to see us win the Europa League, of course. But for me personally, it's anything to get back into the Champions League. When I first started supporting Arsenal, I think I took the Champions League for granted. We finished fourth every year, and I just thought, like, oh, Arsenal's always in the Champions League. And now it's been, you know, years and years since I watched a game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So I definitely miss being in the Champions League. Last season was so, so disappointing with the Europa League, how we lost to Olympiacos. Personally, I think I'm more passionate about the Premier League, especially because we play rivals like United, and I get to come on here and banter Barbs when we win. But I'd say I'm more passionate about the Premier League. I think that should be the priority, getting in the top four. But a trophy is a trophy, and I'd love to see us win Europa this year.
You're out here bantering me about United, but we're playing games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and you're out there Thursday night late.
We also have Unai Emery as our manager just 12 months ago, so I think you can cut us a little bit of slack there.
A little bit, but you don't get very much, especially after you guys beat me this week. I can't give you that much slack.
All right, so that's all for today. It was, you know, great to have you on the show, Pac. You're always welcome back. This episode of Gunners Partey was a great one. And, you know, I'm Andrew Mello. Alongside with you, as always, is Daniel Barbuto. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Peace.